بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. A Sahabi had brought some dates to Nabi sallallahu alaihi wasallam. So Nabi sallallahu alaihi wasallam inquired, "How did you get this?" He explained that I bought superior quality dates, first grade dates, in exchange of second grade dates. I had double the amount. Example, I had 20 kilos. I gave away the 20 kilos of dates in exchange of 10 kilos of dates. So Rasulullah explained to him that don't do this, this is riba. When it's like for like, then let it be weight for weight. And if it is not going to be weight for weight, then this will be a usurious transaction. But if you have to trade in this way, then the procedure is that you will give away your dates that are inferior. You will collect the 20 rand, for example, and with the 20 rands, you will buy the superior quality of dates. Now look at this one situation. Another situation comes around, the Bani Israel, for their own mischievous and wrong behavior. Allah Ta'ala had made certain stringent laws upon them. إِسْرَهُمْ وَالْأَغْلَالَ الَّتِي كَانَتْ عَلَيْهِمْ. Certain burdens were placed upon them, yokes were placed upon them. بِمَا كَانُوا يَفْسُقُونَ, because they had given themselves to transgression and sin. So this difficult laws that had come upon them was because of their own mischievous nature. They were told to respect the Sabbath. On the Sabbath they couldn't work, they couldn't switch on a light, they couldn't do any worldly activity on a Saturday. Now, living on a seaside town, and the fish will appear clearly, distinctly on a Saturday, and on other days, no fish, no sign of the fish. So obviously they were tempted that on Saturdays, it's floating very clearly, distinctly, good sizes, shad is just biting. And look at other days, there's no sign of any fish. Living now, they're living at a seaside town, right on the bank of the shore. So they built some ponds around their homes, and they made small little streams from the sea leading into those ponds. The water will flow in right in. So on a Saturday also the water will flow in, and with the water will come the fish. But before the end of the business of that day, they will close those ponds. So those fish that were there, they were stuck up there. Now they didn't catch the fish. Literally speaking, they didn't catch the fish. They only waited for the Sunday for them to catch the fish. So Allah Ta'ala, because of their monkey tricks, Allah Ta'ala made them monkeys. Right. Now, the one situation you see that Rasulullah showed them something, as though it was a loophole. And there was a loophole that they had engineered for themselves. The first loophole, Rasulullah had explained them himself. And the second one, they had conspired, they had made of themselves, and that had transformed them into apes. So what's the difference between the both? The difference between the both was that in the first case, it was a procedure. The whole procedure was wrong. It was a procedural problem that if you need to trade, then you need to trade in this way. Hence, you did not ruin or demolish any of the Shari'i goals. The Shari'at has got a certain agenda. It's got a certain goal, right? So the agenda of the Shari'at hasn't been destroyed. The theme, the very spirit of the Shari'at hasn't been destroyed. But you're doing like this, do it like this. You're buying gold for gold, and this is how you need to do it. You can't buy it on credit, that's how you need to do it. So it's a Shari'a procedure that is being explained to the person. And in the second case, what's happening is the Shari'at doesn't want you to trap those fish. When it doesn't want you to trap the fish, so you are looking for a way, you're conspiring, and looking for a way how you can defeat the ends of the Shari'a. The Shari'a has got a certain end, it's got a certain goal. And what you are looking for is somehow to defeat the end of the Shari'a and make this permissible. So somehow you'll connive, and you'll conspire, and you'll legalize, halalize the thing. So this is where Rasulullah says to us, explains to us through a beautiful principle that is outlined in the hadith, that al-halalu bayyinun wal-haramu bayyinun, that halal and haram both are clear, both are distinct. What is halal is clear, everybody knows about it, nobody has to be explained. You saw the man cutting that sheep, and he cut all the jugular vein, the windpipe, the food pipe, he's cut everything. So you know it's halal, it's clear, you got no doubts about it. It's water, you know it's completely halal, it's fish, it's halal, you got no doubts about it, no qualms about it. It's milk, you know it's pure and it's clear. So you have no reservations about it. Then you have that area that is totally haram and you are totally clear about its prohibition. You have wine, you know about it, it's clear. Nobody has to come and explain to you that this is wine and therefore it's haram. You know about it, it's haram. It's pork, you know it's pork and you will abstain. Because you know it's clear, nobody has to come and explain to you that this is pork, so therefore you must abstain from it. Nobody needs to give you that explanation. It's music, you know it's clear, it's music, so nobody needs to come and give you an explanation for the prohibition. So what is halal is clear, what is haram is clear, both are totally distinct. Now in between both the halal and haram, or بَيْنَهُمَا mushtabihat, there are areas of doubt. If you look at it from one perspective, it looks like it's totally halal. But you look at the same thing from a different perspective, from a different dimension, now it doesn't sound right. So the one dimension looked at it, looked totally clear, no problem. And the second dimension you looked at it, now you seem to be not very clear. One person came to Mufti Sahib Rahmatullahi, a villager, old man, 55, 60 years of age. So he says, my younger brother, he's just turning of age now, 15, 16 years of age, he's just turning of age, coming mature. And all the while, it was my wife that took care of him. Now he's of age now, 15, 14, 15. And because my wife had brought him up from the napkins, you know, it's like our child. But they still joke and they still very casual, informal with each other. And now and then, they'll be so casual that she will hit a five and he will hit a five on her. So, Mufti Sahib Rahmatullahi, this Buzurgan Adin, they train the people, see, they train people. And in the process of training, they may ask certain questions that may not seem to be right. Outwardly, it doesn't seem to be right, but they want to see now what's in the mind of the person to train the person. So, Mufti Sahib Rahmatullahi asked the person, so what's wrong? He's like your son, so what's wrong now if he hits a five or she hits a five? What's wrong? What's the problem in that? So the villager told Mufti Sahib Rahmatullahi, Namoliji, Namoliji, it's a villager, they speak different. Namoliji, malum nahi kab current lag jaye. We don't know when the current will just strike. He said it in his own village language, but what he said was right. He's 14, 15, and when that electric current will just strike, he doesn't know. You don't know about it, he doesn't know about it. But now it's a villager, it's a person that is backwards. It's a person that is not in an urban life. But when he's got taqwa in him, the taqwa will guide him, it will teach him. Though he is backwards, he seems to be very backwards. His dress doesn't seem to be appealing. His language is not attractive and flowery. But the taqwa that is within him is teaching him, is guiding him by, this is not right, this is right. This is not right, this is right. So really the taqwa brings about the true knowledge. And minus taqwa, you don't get knowledge. You get just a little bit of a flowery language. You have the ability of presenting your case. You're presenting your case. You've got a little bit of a more flowery language. Your language seems to be captivating. It seems to be impressive. That's all. But then real knowledge, depth of the knowledge comes when a person has got taqwa. He's got that fear, the consciousness, the awareness of Allah Ta'ala in his heart. Then that is the thing that brings about knowledge, understanding. It brings about the truth in the person. You don't have to give him a series of lectures and explanations. He's got the taqwa that within his heart he feels that this is not right. When it's not right, then I'm not supposed to be doing it. Then you have to guide the person by, don't overdo it now. What? Don't overdo it. You go with taqwa, but go with the moderation. I had to explain one person today. So he was a little bit going overboard, with taqwa, so I had to explain him. He is in a practice. Now, when you get people working, in contracts, then you get two types of people, two type of contracts. One is a contract where the person has to clock in and serve his hours. For example, 5 to 5, 10 hours or 12 hours. That's the whole arrangement. And you get another type of a work which is project driven. When it's a project driven thing, then the person has to complete the project. So really, it doesn't really matter if he fills in the time or not, whether he fills in that 8 hours or he doesn't fill that 8 hours. It's an understanding between the employment, the managerial and the employment. They know it, they understand it. And they see each other, in fact they clock in also, at their convenience. Normally people will come in at about 10 o'clock, he'll come about 12 o'clock. But the management doesn't take an objection. They see the whole working for the month, and they pay him accordingly. Now, the Sharia has made a provision for this type of situation. So I have to explain to him, see, there are two different types of arrangements, and don't think that this is against taqwa. Because there is a thing like usage in the Sharia. Urf, that we will say in Arabic. In English we will say usage. And the usage is acceptable. Now that usage, we practice it every day in our homes, but we don't even realize that we are practicing it. The man is the boss of the house, alright? He's the boss of the house. So he'll fill the stove, the pantries, the groceries, and all, he'll fill everything up. Now there is a certain standard for a certain individual in the home. There'll be three people in the home, three classes of people. One is your child, one is your wife, and one is the servant, right? There is a certain type of a usage that is understood for the servant, for the worker. Now you mustn't say servant, because now you say servant, then it goes against the law, you see. But you can look at the servant, all haram, and you can do, it's alright. That's not haram. But you mustn't say servant, say worker. But every other haram you do, whether it's porn, whatever else, it's alright. So it's a different world we're living in. As though Allah Pak is not the head of this world, there's someone else that is ruling this world. So anyway, what we're getting at is now there is a different understanding for the worker, there is a different understanding for the child, there is a different understanding for the mother. Right? Three people are sharing the same home, but there's three different levels of understanding. The worker has got certain access to the home, right? Some access he's got. He can use the soap, for example. He can take his food, for example, right? He can use the water, for example. He may wash his clothing, for example. So there is a certain standard that is acceptable for the worker. Then there is a certain standard that is acceptable for the child of the house. Child can help himself in the fridge. He can go to the pantry, he can help himself. There's a cold drink, he can help himself. There's some fruit, he can help himself. So there is a different level of usage for the child. Then there is a third level of usage. The third level of usage is for the wife. The wife, she's taken at a different level. So the level that she will enjoy is, for example, she's got about 10 mehman came in, right? And there isn't sufficient food, so she can go to the vault, she can take out 1,000 rands, and she can purchase the stuffs, and she can lay it out for the mehman that she's received. The husband doesn't take exception to it, and in fact he will reprimand her, but the mehman was there, then why didn't you just take out the money and serve them? So you see, it's all your wealth. And in spite of it being your wealth, you have got a different understanding for your wife, different understanding for your child, and different understanding for the servant. Now if your child takes away, a small child, 10 years of age, he pulls out 1,000 or 2,000 rand from the vault, that's going to be a problem. That's not meant for you. That's not the understanding with you. Although it's not spoken about, you don't even say it to the child. But it's an understood practice that the child mustn't exceed this limit. And if the servant begins to help himself freely with everything and anything, she's working there, she's calling all the mamas to come and eat every day. See? But you've got a certain limit, you keep to your limit, right? So she is not going to be allowed to do that, right? You have given a certain privilege, you will remain at that limit. You have given the child a certain privilege, and he will remain at that level. You have given the wife a certain privilege, she will remain at that level. So she's got a privilege as well. But if she wants to draw 100,000 rands from your vault, that's not going to be acceptable, isn't it? So the Sharia recognizes this. Now this is called urf, this is called usage. Right? In the day of Rasulullah Pak Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, there was a similar type of a practice. Hazrat Hinda bint Utba, she came complaining to Rasulullah Pak Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, Ya Rasulullah, Abu Sufyan is very tight with his money. Tight first. Controls. Now some husbands are like that, a little bit tight. They want to budget, they want to see everything is in place. So he's a little bit tight. Misikun. He's a little bit tight. So Ya Rasulullah, now I have some problems. You know, I got children there, I got myself there. What do I do? Khudi ma yakfiki wa waladiki bil ma'ruf. According to usage, what's sufficient for you and what's sufficient for your children, you may take. You know, his money is placed in a certain drawer and the man is not spending. Right? So you can take for yourself and you can take for your children, but in accordance to the usage. See that? So in accordance to the usage, what's your standards? This is your standards and this is what is your requirement. Look at your standards, look at your requirement, you can take away from his wealth and use it. Now it's not a blanket permission, but it's based on usage. What's the standard? According to your standard, you can use. There was a practice in the day of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam that if the fruit was fallen, there was a fallen fruit, right? Then that you can pick up and you can eat. But that's what on the tree you can't break. So that was an accepted usage, it was an accepted practice, accepted norm right throughout Arabia. In many parts of Arabia at that time, there was a practice that there were goats or sheep grazing. You see one goat or one sheep, and you go and milk it, and you can drink the milk. It's an accepted norm. Like how you have in your home an external tap, right outside, near the fence, right? If some musafir or someone is walking past, he opens the tap and he drinks. You don't take objections to it. So that is for the tap that is right on the outside. But that which is right inside the home, you don't allow him to do that. So there are certain things that are accepted. The Sharia allows it. You don't have to ask a permission for it. But provided there is a usage for it. If there isn't a usage for it, then you can't just go into someone's farm and milk the goat. Say, in Nabi's time they were doing it, so why can't I do it? Or, for example, that type of usage was for a certain type of a fruit, a little bit of a date or something, and the permission was given. But now, you walk past Nemba and you saw a big, two, three big jackfruit, all fallen down, you can't pick it up and you take it. There's no usage for that, you see. You can't say this was practiced in the time of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, therefore we practice it today. There was a usage for a certain fruit, at a certain time, in a certain zamana. Now you can't extend that analogy to every zamana and every period. You see, What a blessing it is to have these imams. If it wasn't for these imams, could you place all this? Could you rule out all these different situations? Like I showed you, one usage for the wife, one for the child, one for the worker, and then to their extents and their limitations. Could you make out all these things? Could you find out a certain way or a certain system for all of them? That all of them could coexist. But now, look at the beauty of the Sharia. Otherwise, it would have meant that the child wants to pull out a banana from the fridge or something. Say, Abba, I'm taking one banana. You don't mind? I can have the full banana. I will eat half or leave quarter. See? The child would have had to do all this. Especially if he's a grown-up child. Right? If he's a grown-up child, then he must take care of himself. Right? The child would have any small little thing. Say, Abba, I'm going to take this. Then I say, hey, I got some mehman. How much milk must I use? Can I burn the stove for so many minutes? Every little thing she would have had to take permission for. So you see, these fuqaha-i kiram, these imams, when they prepared this entire system of fiqh, then this entire system of fiqh was a blessing. Had they not prepared this whole system of fiqh, then you would have said that the child is stealing from the house. Hey, the wife is stealing, she's a robber. Big cheat she is, you know. She's just using up my money like that. You would have said that. So this fiqh is not a curse, na'uzu billah. It's a blessing. It made so many things easier. So much easier. So much, you know, it's improved our lifestyle. It's made it so much easier. They got it from the hadith, from the practice of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, from the Sahaba Ikram, but they got it all ironed out for us, clear. And we can see it, hey, it's so clear, man. And it's all supported from the hadith. It's all supported from the Quran Sharif. But it's so clear, so easy, so manifest, you know, it's so abundant clear. So Rasulullah has explained this law, that one is halal, and halal is absolutely clear, haram is absolutely clear. In between both, you are getting certain areas that is mushtabihat, doubtful. Now in these doubtful areas, what do you do? In doubtful areas, what do you do? Because it's a two-dimensional thing. If you look at it from one dimension, it sounds to be totally permissible. Like I explained this now, this villager, and he's speaking about his brother, younger brother, and his wife, and the casual informal relationship they have. From one dimension you look at it, it sounds permissible. From the other dimension you look at it, it sounds impermissible. Now what do you do? So here, that golden principle that Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam illustrates for the Ummah, فَاشْتَبِهُ عَنِ الْمُشْتَبِهَاتِ. Doubtful areas, then stay out. You keep out of. Don't go and mess around there. Don't go and play around the doubtful area. Don't you tell your child, there's a fire there, don't go near there. There's a fight there, there's a shootout there, don't go near there. Don't you say that. There's a shootout, don't go there. It's two dimension, you may be saved, or you may perhaps just engage in the war, in the fight, and you may save someone. But you, in the rush, you can be killed as well. It's a two dimensional thing. So when it's a double dimensional thing, then you ask the person to stay away, to keep away. So that's the logical system. That when you see a two dimensional thing, then you obviously will tell the person, stay away, keep clear of the way of danger. Don't go and mess around, don't go and burn your hands. Don't you say that? In dunya, we do apply that principle. In deen, all the more why we should be applying the same principle, that don't go and mess around in that area. Because today you will play around here, tomorrow what will it be? And apart from what will happen tomorrow, the bad name that it leaves for you, it leaves a bad name, a stigma against your name. One, in India you have a system, you know. All the madrasas, they can accommodate a certain amount of students. They'll have a provision for about 200, 300, 500, 1000 students. So board, lodge, eating, drinking, everything, they'll be able to provide for 1,000, for example, or 500, according to their capacity. So in most cases, 99% of the cases, you will have more students want to enroll into the madrasa because they see there's good systems, they see there's good education that's imparted. So you've got a provision for 1,000, and you're getting 1,500 students coming in. So you're not going to chase them away from education. You'll say, see, we've only got arrangements for 1,000. We can only feed so many. We can't feed more than that. But what we will do is, if you want, you can live here. We won't be responsible for your lodging and your eating. But you can feed here, you can stay here, you can take the education. The education is free, the living is free. But as far as the food is concerned, we can only arrange for 1,000. We can't arrange for more than that. So you make your own arrangements. Now what happens is the townspeople, they of themselves volunteer. It's all right, we will take 10, I will take 5, I will take 20. So the excess students, they are covered in this way. One young student, he comes to the Mawthani, he's about 19, 20, good, smart looking. Good height, good complexion, everything. So he comes to the Mawthani Sahib Rahmatullah and says, Hazrat, you know, you'll arrange for me to eat from a certain woman's place, but I want to cancel this arrangement from today onwards. Abruptly, I want to cancel this arrangement. But what happened, bhai? So, you know, she's turned widow and she sent a proposal for me. Now, Mawlana says, like I explained earlier on, this Buzurgaradin and Mashaikh, they train their students. They want to see what's in their mind and they want to train them. And why they need to train them and why they need to speak to them in this way is their stay amongst the students is limited. So their work has to be continued. The students will be the successor to their throne. So if they don't discuss all these matters, when they're in that position, then how will they reason? How will they take care, control of the situation? So Mawlana tells him, you know what? But what's wrong? You know, this girl has sent a proposal for you. You don't have a decent home. You don't have a job. You'll get a home. You'll get accommodation. You'll get food. And over and above, you know, it's nikah. Nikah is sunnat. And then it's a widow. And to take care of a widow, you'll get all the sawab and all that. Now, Mawlana is checking the person out, you see. So he says, no, Mawlana, I'm not interested. But what's the problem? Mawlana is trying to work him out. So he says, you see, Mawlana, what's going to happen? The whole town is going to say that these students come to study here and they strike some type of a private relationship with the woman of the town. That's what the town people are going to say. Right? They come to study and then they strike private relationship with the woman around. So what are they doing? Are they coming here to study or are they coming here to strike relationship with this woman? So it's going to be a bad name for me. It's going to be a bad name for my teachers. It's going to be a bad name for the madrasa. It's going to be a bad name for Muslims in general. It's a double dimensional thing. On one side, you look at it perfectly normal, acceptable, halal, permissible, mustahab, to get to sort out a widow. Isn't it a rewarding thing? But if you look at it from a different dimension, different perspective, now, it's deplorable, it's disgraceful, it's humiliating. Don't you have this? You have this happening. So now what are you going to do? So Mawlana gave him an applaud, mashallah. You're thinking, I applaud you for your thinking. And he left it out. Mawlana made an arrangement for something else. Looking at the level of taqwa, his understanding and reasoning, Mawlana was great. He was greatly pleased. And he made some type of an alternate relationship, arrangement for the child. So you're going to get these things coming up all the time. So the one that guards himself from these type of doubtful areas is tabara'a li deenihi wa irdihi. He has guarded his deen, he has guarded his integrity. Your respect also has been guarded and your deen has also been guarded. Now, we can apply this to all situations. You know, what we forget many a times is the aspect of taqwa. And once we have got the aspect of taqwa in our lives, the taqwa itself will teach you, it will motivate you. Then you have to then moderate the person. Don't overdo it. To this point, it's alright. Don't worry, don't overdo it, just come here. Just come with moderation. Like I showed you, the aspect of usage, right? The problem is when we forget the aspect of usage, at that point, everything goes haywire. Everything gets confused. Now you go to a takeaway, for example, you saw a nice, beautiful, pretty little young waitress, right? So you give her a smirk on the face, you take out a $15 or $20, $100 or something and you give it to her. I'm very, very thankful of your service and all that, right? Now just compare the situation. That wife that has been slogging for you, slaving for you for years, right? Did you compliment her like that? Did you give her a present also? For all the years of service that she was providing, did you compliment her? Did you acknowledge her? Did you give her some type of compliment? So you look at it, no, you know what? You have Muslims, you have to be polite, you have to be respectable, you have to be very, very curt, you have to be cautious, you have to be compassionate, you know. And these people here, they're working, so they need something. So all your ikram and all the hadith that you learned about politeness, etc., had to come to this woman here. But that woman that is slaving for you, is struggling for you, all her years she's given, her youth, her health, her vigor, she's given everything for you. What about her? So it's a double dimensional thing. In the double dimensional thing, now how are you going to carry yourself? That's the important thing. You are driving a nice car on a Sunday or Saturday, whatever it is, you're going to pass an area. So one young little girl, smartly dressed, and that type of hair she's got, whatever else. And then you said, all the ikrame muslima. So let me give it to her. Put her into the cab. Then you thought to yourself, you know, you're going to put her into the back seat. It will look so rude, you know, so impolite. I kept her in the back seat. Give her a back seat. You know, she's a human being. She's not an animal. So all that ikram, all that politeness, everything will come for this girl here. And then, if I'm not going to speak to her, then it will look so impolite, you know. Let me speak to her. I don't want to be hostile. What do you think of Islam? Islam, Muslims are all hostile. Terrorists. Let me speak to her sweetly. So you see, all that compassion, that love, everything is directed the wrong place. But then when you're going to practice this, you are going to embarrass yourself, embarrass your deen. Aren't you? If someone sees, hey, but what is Maulana doing? What is he up to? What is his niyat? Why has he got this girl, this young little girl? And why is he talking so sweetly to her? And why is she in the front seat? And why are they alone? So isn't this going to create a lot of suspicion and doubt? Now, our problem is, see, we do the wrong and we got certain phrases that we have made in our defense. We do wrong and we have got certain phrases that we build up and we make up for our defense. The type of phrases that we use nowadays don't become judgmental. Big words, very, very big word, and don't become judgmental. But I don't bring this type of stupid explanation. Right. If you are, for example, observing all the traffic rules, right? Observing all the traffic rules. Alif to Assalam, all the traffic rules you're observing. But in the meanwhile, on the side, you are doing some uplang. In the eyes of the law, won't you be a criminal? So now you say the law, hey, you're judgmental. Will you say the police to someone, some police coming to take to investigate? Will you tell them you're judgmental? Don't be judgmental about me. You know, I'm conforming to all the traffic regulations. So you look at only one dimension. You don't look at the other side. You don't see I give sadaqah and everything else. But you're only looking at the fact that, you know, I don't dress up correctly, I don't put a scarf on my head. You see how they'll mix up things. All confused, complicated, one-sided. Where it suits them, then you become judgmental. Where it doesn't suit them, then you're not judgmental. So this is not how you would view Islam, how you'd view deen. In your dunya, you are very intelligent, you are very wise, you are very capable, you can see things in perspective. Why can't you use your same wisdom in your dini matters? In dunya matters, aren't you very wise? Aren't you intelligent? Don't you see things in perspective? Hey, my job is on the line, I need to wake up, I need to buck up, I need to see things are right. My business will fall just now, will collapse. Don't you get a shock, don't you get a jolt when you hear things like that? You wake up. So all deen is asking of you is istanzihu anish shubhat. Istanzihu anish shubhat. These things that are of a doubtful nature, just keep clear of that. Just keep clear. You will see the understanding will grow. Anything, slight shubha, slight doubt, your heart is not clear about it, just keep away. Al ithmu ma haqqa fi sadri. You don't feel clear in your heart. وَيَخَافُ أَنْ يَتَّلِيَ عَلَيْهِ النَّاسِ. You are afraid that people will come to know about it. Now how, what's the gauge to see it's wrong? That you don't feel clear in your heart. And you're afraid that people must come to know about it. So now this is the area, this is the gauge. When you see that, hey, I don't want people to come to know about it. So you must know now there's something wrong in this practice. I don't want people to come to know about it. So you'll find, right throughout your life, you'll find works that are double dimensional. You have got a clear niyat to go to a bar to buy a bottle of Sprite or lemonade, or a bottle of Coke, right? But will you go to the bar? You won't go into the bar. You want to go into a casino, you just want to see now, you know, some sporting event or something. But you know, if someone sees you in the casino, and what conclusions they will derive for you, especially if you sent a proposal for a girl from a very pious family, you know, and then someone comes and tells that girl, you know, we saw your husband or your fiancé, we seen him in that casino, Suncoast or something. See? Now you can use your akal, they will use akal, you know, hey, you know, I'm going to get bad name just now, I don't want to take a chance. As it is, you know, somehow we struggled and got this thing confirmed, and now I must get myself bad name, no, I'm not going to do it. Aren't you cautious about it? You are really cautious about it. So Rasulullah is showing you the gauge for sin. So it's not a complicated thing, it's not a thing that you need to be a scientific, rocket scientist or something to come to that conclusion. You put your mind, you just put things together. If I know, is this not right? Something is not clear here. Something is not clear here, I must just keep away from this. Where people can misconstrue, or facts can be misconstrued, where facts can be misconstrued in your mind, in the minds of people, then you will keep away from those areas. Anything. Rasulullah is sitting in Aitikaf. His respected family, our mother, Hazrat Safiya radiallahu anha, she comes to visit Rasulullah whilst Rasulullah is in Aitikaf. So Rasulullah accompanies her right till the door. And at the entrance of the masjid, Rasulullah sees two Ansari Sahaba. And when they saw Rasulullah, and Rasulullah was with this Ummul Mu'mineen, so they sped off, like how when we see a woman, right, husband with a woman or something, then you won't want to be there. You want to pass time there, because now it's his privacy, it's his wife, that's his respect. We're not going to entertain a casual talk. We're not going to do that. We're not going to engage into a talk. Nowadays, when I see people driving, and I feel, even if you know the registration, then don't look at the driver. Even if you know the registration, then the safer thing is not to look at the driver. Because if you look at the driver, and there's eye contact, right, and on impulse you just raise your hands. Now the girl sees, what is Moranis? Don't you have that fear? You have that fear. She may just go and share the same thing with her husband. You know, Moranis is interested in me. What's going to happen? Doesn't it happen? Will it happen or not? It's happening. These things are happening. And the rate of suspicion is great. So you don't engage in these areas of suspicion. Even though it's a client, it's a customer, but you don't talk to her cute, kindly, politely. No, you rather have on mamas serving her. A mama that is unattractive, mustn't be attractive just now. It's unattractive, but she's serving a person. So otherwise, your whole focus changes. Even it's, you know, it doesn't make business sense. Even business can encounter a lot of problems in your own business. The whole focus changes. You're getting more interested in the person than your business. So Rasulullah tells that Sahaba, "Ala rislik," just hold on. Don't rush. So they stopped for that moment. Rasulullah says to them, "Hazi is Safiya. This is Safiya radiyallahu anha, my Ummul Mu'mineen, your mother. This is." So they said to Rasulullah, "Ya Rasulullah, of all people, can we have any doubts about yourself, Ya Rasulullah? Of all people in the world, we can have doubts on ourselves, on our fathers, or whoever else, that they will betray. But you are the last person. How can we ever have such thoughts about you?" So Rasulullah cautioned that Sahaba and told him, "Inna shaitana yajri min al-insani majraddam." Shaitan runs like blood in your system. Like how blood runs, shaitan also runs in your system like that. He can just instill some type of a doubt in your mind. And the doubt will be against myself. And if you ever have a doubt against me, your iman is gone. You don't trust your Nabi any longer. What's happened to your iman? Iman is gone, finished. You don't know iman after that. Iman is lost. You made lose confidence in yourself, in your father or someone else. Alright, your iman is still there. But if you lost trust in Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, then everything is gone. Khalas. Nothing is left. So I had to clear your minds at this point. See. So these areas that create doubts, suspicions, misconstrued facts. It starts off very small. It starts off very, very innocently. But then it builds up to something that is very significant. Like you see this Bani Israel story. Right? It started off in a very, very, very simple way. You know, they first made a loophole. Then they became blatant about the whole thing. And when they became blatant about it, then were they transformed into apes and swines. Initially it starts off like that. So similar is the case with all other gunas. You start off very, very small, very innocent. And then after that, when you have broken one barrier, then you want to go on to the next barrier. And you break the next barrier, and then you become blatant about the whole thing. The same with photography. It really was a question, photography or television, etc. What's ITV? The ITV now. Islamic television. I suppose that's the meaning. I don't know what's the meaning, but I assume that's Islamic TV. Like, if I say it a little bit blunt, you know, like is to ask, what about halal pork? Yeah. ITV is like asking, what is it like halal pork? Tell me what's the difference. If there's any difference, show me the difference. So I'm thinking now to myself, how can I explain this person here? I don't want to make a long, lengthy tafsir about it. But let me just explain to him in a very short way. If he's got the understanding or he's willing to understand, he'll understand. So I wrote, the Rasulullah Paksam blankly refused to enter the house where there was the picture of an animate object. He blankly refused. He didn't want to go into that house. There's a picture, there's an animate object, I don't want to go into that house. Now, you may say, alright, the television is not playing all the time. It's not playing all the time. Sometimes it plays, most of the time it's switched off. So I ask you, I said, Rasulullah refused to enter that house where there was the picture of an animate object, right? Like I'm saying, you know, that robber, we're not going to forgive him. We're going to punish him. Catch him, we're going to punish him. He's robbing, he's cheating, right? So we caught him in the house, he's robbing, and we punished him. But one is now, that robber is gone out of the house, but he's got his weapons. He's still looking towards your house. He's robbed, he's cheated, everything. And he's outside the house. Will you forgive him? Will you pardon him? So the malaika, can those malaika be compassionate to that person? He's got it there. And he's got the intention that whenever I get the chance, I will rob this house. I will rob the wife of the attention towards the husband. I will rob the husband from the attention towards the wife. I will rob the child from the attention towards his parents, towards his obligations and duties. I will rob them all. So it's there. It's pointing, it's barreled towards that home. And then we say, no, it's switched off. Who are we trying to fool and who are we trying to appease? Is we appeasing our own selves? No, nobody else. Is there any difference? Like I said, halal pork. Now, ITV, Islamic television, any difference? Show me the difference. Just adding the word Islam doesn't make anything permissible. The Jews also did same thing they did. Allah declared for them that fat is haram. Harramna alayhim kulla zi sufur. Harramna alayhim shuhumahuma. The fats of animals we have declared haram. So when they heard that Allah Pak has declared that haram, so what they did? Adabuha. Adabuha faba'uha wa akalu samanaha. What they did, that fat of the animal, they went and melted it. After melting it, they sold it. And they didn't eat the fat, they ate the money. Now, what is this? What is this? You're playing away. So you start off sometimes innocently, small, you start off innocently. And then you break one barrier, and the second barrier, and the third barrier. Now there was a head of a school that came here, he came to complain. Big school, and he came to complain. He says, the whole school was on an excursion. And it was a sporting event. Some final was carrying on. So they were already on an excursion. Wherever they were on that excursion. But now it was a sporting event. So the whole school, what they thought of, all the students, what they thought of, is we can delay and postpone our namaz. And The reason why we have to postpone the namaz is because we won't be able to see this life again. We won't be able to see it live. It's playing now, we'd rather see it now. And then the namaz, Isha namaz, can always be postponed. So now the head of the school is complaining to me that this is the reasoning of the child, or this is the training of the child. And there were certain religious conscious people amongst those, the crowd. There were some people that were dini conscious. Right. Now what type of mindset will these children have when they go back home? We're not talking of permissibility. You're looking at it from two dimensions, right? The permissibility, we're not looking about the permissibility, but it's two dimensions. When it's two dimensions, these children are going to go back home, and what's the type of training that's going to be settled in their minds? They will think like this, that if there's a sporting event, right, the namaz can go, it's all right, because the namaz, we can always read it with a postponement, right? But this sporting event, we can't postpone that thing. So we rather just see the sporting event, and then we can postpone the namaz. So this is the training that they will go back. Tomorrow they will apply the same thing to Jummah namaz as well. Nauzubillah. Can it happen or not? Once they get hooked on it, it's an addiction. Won't it happen? Now the man that came to complain to me, he didn't have a proper beard, no proper topi, nothing. But I told him, "Bhai, you know, I take exception to your dress. I don't like your dress. But really, you know, the sentiments that you have come to me with, really, I respect those sentiments. If only Allah gave us all that type of sentiments, that type of respect. That's very great. Although you don't have a proper topi, but you are better than many people that don't have topi, that wear topis and keep beards. You are better than them because your sentiments are so high for Islam. Your spirit is so high. Your respect for deen is so high." I had to tell him that because I was overwhelmed. I felt very good for the person. His respect, his values, the sentiments that he displayed at that moment was very great, exceptionally great. That he took exception for a rightful reason. That he saw it from a different dimension, that these children are going to go back home. Then they're going to have a sporting event. When a sporting event is going to come, they will say that we had some dini seniors amongst us, and they didn't take exception to this, so what's wrong in it? See? So this is where it starts off from. In the Arab lands, Yunus Puna was one of the head of the Tabligh Jamaat. In that whole area, it's a province on its own. Like how you have Johannesburg or Cape Town, one state is Pune. He was the head of the whole Tabligh Jamaat. So he was here. I was in the Bayan. So he says about 50, 60 years ago, when they had to introduce television. Right? So first, those people that were more dini conscious, they objected. They objected. They came up in arms, protesting. So the government wanted to suppress them by force. The force of law, they want to suppress them. So their Western advisors objected, said, "Oh, no, you don't do that. You don't do that. You don't object to them. Let them carry on." In the meanwhile, the advisors, the Western advisors, non-Muslims, what they told them, you know what, you give them positions and see them, give them wealth, give them good homes, give them monthly allowances, cars, televisions, give them everything good, you know, air conditions, you know, hot lands, so you give them air cons, etc. Give them positions and give them allowance every month. Let them run for 4 or 5 years. Now after 4 or 5 years, they are soaked up in that wealth, in that comfort zone. Now they say, now you introduce this. Now when you introduce it, now when they stood up in objection, right, bring all the privileges back. Say, this, your reasons are right, permissible, we can now make a plan for you. Now you see how the agenda just changed, the whole agenda changed. That carrot is being dangled. Now, this is that area where the deen says, where it's a two-dimensional thing, what you're supposed to be doing, is then you leave out that area of doubt. Because you don't know from which point you will hop on to which point, what will happen the next moment. Just now, today you've got a little bit of reservation. Tomorrow, those barriers will break. When those barriers will break, you won't consider the haram as haram. Allah the tawfiq.